Did you all hear that start?
Yep.
Yes.
Fantastic. For now, I'm going to leave everyone unmuted because it seems pretty good, or that it's been pretty good up until right now. But if anyone starts to hear lots of background noise, I can fix that. But in the meantime, if you know you're not talking, or if you know you have background noise where you are,
Andy?
Or if you have, yes?
There's a bit of a feedback. Being...
Yep. It sounds like someone may have two phones in the same room. It doesn't sound like actual, like, something happening on that side. So if you have two phones in the same room, either hang one up or mute one, or I'm going to have to mute everyone, which I would rather not do here. But also, if you can mute your phones by pressing *6 at any point in time, or just muting by pressing a mute button on your phone, I would really, really, really appreciate that, because that would prevent me from having to mute everyone. I hear someone touching their phone, so if you're muting it, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Lisa, correct me, but that sounds a lot better to me. So if anyone else is continuing to hear background noise, let me know, but I'm going to leave it unmuted for now. But don't hesitate to reach out and let me know if we need it muted. But I really want this to be as open and honest a conversation as we can have. But before we get there, I will introduce myself. Some of you may have heard me introduce myself at the very, very beginning, but for the first time in years, I was the first person on the call. So go me. My name is Andy Marks. I live in the New York City area, technically in New Jersey. Here in the U.S., I am one of the three co-hosts of this LHON live call. I'm hearing myself again, background. So if that person could mute, if you have it on speaker or something like that, I would really appreciate it. But I'm one of the three LHON live co-hosts. We take turns hosting, but in this new format, we do try and share that opportunity and allow everyone an opportunity to be a part of the conversation. So I know Jessica's here. She's one of the other hosts as well. Jessica, do you want to say hey real fast?
Hey, everyone.
And I'm not sure if Maria is there, but if she is, Maria, would you like to say hey?
I am. Hi, everyone.
Oh, fantastic. Maria, hey.
Hi.
Fantastic. So as I said, we take turns hosting these calls. Actually, I had the pleasure of meeting Maria and Jessica back in June of 2014 at what was the first LHON conference for each of the three of us, the second or third actual LHON conference. But when we were there, we realized how important it was to connect with other people who are on this journey with us and who are a part of this community, and how meaningful it was to connect in person. But we wanted a way to extend that connection and that opportunity really throughout the year. And we thought there wasn't really a better way than to have a conference call where we're able to kind of share some of that connection, albeit not in the same room, but we can hear each other's voices and share a lot of that. So we've really enjoyed these conference calls for approaching 5 years now, which is amazing. This is, I guess, just starting our sixth year, which is really, really, really cool to us. So thank you all to all of us who've been here since 2014, and to anyone who's joining today for the first, or tonight for the first time ever, thank you even more, and really hope you enjoy the call. But if not, these calls change topics each month, so I'm sure there will be a topic that's important to you. I don't always mention this, but if you really enjoy the call, there are lots and lots of archived calls on the UMDF website. You could spend from now until the September call listening to old calls if you want. And I really encourage you to do so. I like to think we've gotten a lot better, but I haven't gone back to listen to the 2014 call recently. Maybe I'll do that. But before we get started, there are just a few ground rules here. This is, like I said, an opportunity to connect first and foremost, to share experiences, to I'm hearing background noise again.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's myself or someone else, but
yeah,
that TV right there.
Or some, yeah.
I can mute everyone. Hold on. I'm going to see if I can isolate who it is and mute them specifically. And I'm sorry if I mute you, but it's because I'm trying to isolate this and it's not, I'm doing my best. Did that get some of it?
Yeah.
It seems to have gotten some of it. Okay. I'm sorry. I muted someone. So my apologies if that was you. But as I said, first and foremost, the goal of these calls is to connect with each other, to share advice, to talk about something that maybe all of us haven't had experience with. There are a few things we talk less about here, and I'm going to characterize it that way instead of never talk about here this time, purposefully. And those are any amount of legal advice, medical advice for people that are part of this community, and usually employment advice. Tonight, we're actually talking about jobs, so we're going to kind of tiptoe along that a little more. The reason I bring up those three topics specifically is because we're not experts. And even though we're going to talk about jobs and things like that today, again, I'm still not an expert. I just have a little bit of experience with jobs, and there are a lot of people on this call who have a little bit of experience with jobs, and together, collectively, we have a lot of experience. So we're going to kind of share that with everyone here, kind of talk about what it was like applying for jobs as a blind person, maybe going blind while you have a certain job, how to deal with that, dealing with applications, dealing with interviews, how we think about these things, both functionally, like how we actually approach them, but also emotionally what it's like. We may talk about when to disclose an eye condition or a disability or blindness during that process and how to do that. And again, this is just going to be the experience and advice we have, but based on my experience, I'd say first and foremost, everyone approaches these things differently. And it's the right answer for one person isn't always the right answer for other people. But to kick us off, I will kind of ground everyone and give a quick mile-high view of my career up to this point to ground us all, and if others would like to do some of that as well. But then I want to start the conversation around some of the questions I already touched on a little bit there. But to give everyone a sense of where I'm coming from a career perspective, I'm getting background again, and that time it was me, so I think someone may have it muted.
Andy, you just want to hear your voice.
I really don't. I mean, I have to listen to myself on recordings a lot more in the past 2 years since I've been recording myself more. I'm looking here at the bottom, like 7 people have themselves muted, so I really appreciate that. But I started my career, I graduated school back in 2011, started a career. I actually moved down to Disney at the time. I was going to school in North Carolina, moved down to the southernmost part of the East Coast here in the US to Florida, and started a career in market research or consumer insight or data analysis or applied statistics. All of those are the same thing to me. Back there, I was an intern originally. I was brought on full time. I was promoted to a senior analyst at that point in time. And about 2.5 years in, so end of 2013, beginning of 2014, just a few months before I met many of you on this call, in fact, I started to lose my vision. As many of you would expect, by that January, I'd stopped driving. By that February, I had a diagnosis. I took the approach of not taking much time off work. I took only a handful of days in order to have doctor's appointments and get my diagnosis confirmed. At that point in time, I approached the Division for Blind Services. I started requesting different things from the Low Vision Center there through the state of Florida. I did some independent living skills classes and orientation mobility classes, one-on-one actually outside of work because I couldn't make it to the facility during the working hours. I changed teams while I was there at Disney. Again, still in market research, just supporting different stakeholders and clients internally. But basically changing the fact that I wouldn't have to travel across property very much and rely on driving and drivers. I was promoted again while I was there at Disney. And then early in 2017, I had been at Disney close to 6 years and decided I was ready for a change as well and opened my eyes to different parts of the country and different companies to work for. And I ended up moving up to the New York City area. I work in Newark, New Jersey now, live in Hoboken, and I work for Audible, which is the world's leading producer and creator of spoken word entertainment. But we are part of Amazon, which is a company that let's see, there are 20 people on the call. At least 19 of you have probably heard of Amazon. and so I've been here for about 2.5 years. I do market research here as well. Started as a manager, and I've been promoted to senior manager in my time here as well. And we can talk about that application process, but I've been really happy here. And so I have some experience working in the working world as a sighted person, and at this point, a lot more experience working in the working world as a legally blind person from LHON. So with that, I'll kind of open it up and take some questions. But if we don't get many, as I said, I have lots of questions for the group as well. I'm assuming someone who I muted is trying to ask a question right now. If I have muted you, star 6 will still work to unmute yourself. I have verified that. But I can unmute all and then try to mute all again if that doesn't work. But I'm going to give an opportunity for those who are unmuted, which is the majority, to ask a question now before I unmute everyone again.
Andy, it's Lissa. Can you talk a little bit about the job interview process, especially, you know, with LHON? Was it different in any way?
Yeah. To answer with a binary, yes, it is different. I've obviously applied for jobs before, but I've applied to lots of jobs since. I've always taken the approach of not disclosing immediately my condition. That said, if you Google my name and type in prior employment, you will either find places I volunteered within blind communities, or me even talking about being legally blind. So I don't hide it by any means. I also always disclose that information before meeting anyone in person. I've actually been given the feedback that I don't keep great eye contact since losing my vision, which didn't come as a shock to me, but I like to kind of head that off with the idea that I am legally blind and I'm not hiding this fact. This is part of who I am. It doesn't decrease my ability in your open position. It doesn't make me any better or worse of a candidate. In some ways it may make me more empathetic, but I am just as good at what I do, and I am quick to assure people that I am an ideal candidate for their positions. But I normally don't always carry a white cane into every interview, although I would often enter buildings like that. And I'm quick to ask for what I need as well. So you mentioned the interview process. Before I meet anyone for an in-person interview, another thing I always ask for when I disclose my disability, and I kind of say it under the guise of I'm telling you this information because I'd like you to share with me if there's going to be any kind of practical exercise for this in-person interview. So I work in statistics and do a lot from a computer, and I tell them that, hey, I'm letting you know I'm legally blind, so you can let me know if I need to request anything special for that interview, because I want you to kind of rise me up for success in that interview as well. I'm getting background noise from someone that's saying hello to someone who just got there. So if you could mute, that'd be great. But that's how I treat the interview process. On top of just working hard at interviewing like everyone would and being as confident as you can. That's advice I would give sighted and non-sighted people.
Did you think that having to disclose it or having the vision loss, did it make it any harder as you were interviewing? Did you think that anything, you know, did it stand? Did you think anyone subtly kept you back, or do you think it didn't have any impact at all? Or
in my case, I can't think of times where I think it's actively held me back. I can think about times where in my employment, I do think things have been held back from me because of my vision loss, and I'm happy to talk about some of those. But specifically with the interview process, once I've gotten to an in-person interview, I don't feel that holds me back at all. I don't write notes the way I normally would have with a pen and paper, which is how most people would tell you to write notes in an interview, because there's not a screen between you and the other person, kind of putting up a wall. Now I do have an iPad with a Bluetooth keyboard there if I want to take any notes. I rarely use it because normally when I'm interviewing, or being interviewed rather, I'm taking less notes than they are. So I think, especially, and once I get in a seat and I'm seated and I have someone across from me in a what I consider a pretty traditional interview style, I feel I'm just as able to answer those types of things. If you're used to referring to your own resume in general, I discourage you from doing that in general, but you can do your best to kind of memorize the things that you're putting in front of people, because you should be an expert on that before you go talking about yourself. You should certainly be an expert on yourself if you're an expert on anything.
Hey, Andy, it's John.
Hey, John.
You mentioned you contact the person before an in-person interview, asking if there's a practical aspect to the interview. Have you encountered a practical aspect? And if so, what was it? Was it a test, or, you know, and how did you handle that?
I have had practical aspects to interviews since I've lost my vision. They've ranged from someone providing me a data set and basically giving me a project, and I had 3 hours to basically do that project and turn it into a PowerPoint that I would then present, where they gave me data from a project, gave me the objective of the project, and I had to basically turn that into work. In that case, I don't think they gave me any extra time to do that, which I was able to work with. What I asked for in that case was just to do it from my own work computer. So I brought my computer instead of working from one they had, and asked them to provide a CD, or I think it was a flash drive in that case, with the data, instead of just giving me the same computer they had other applicants work from. And I was able to plug it in and use my built-in, in my case, Zoom Text, to work and manipulate the data in the way that I'm used to, and then move it over to PowerPoint or a Word doc. I'm not entirely sure what kind of report format I used in that case, but build some spreadsheets and Excel and all that kind of stuff. But my fix there was just using my own system. I've also had other exercises where I had to basically do a reading sample or a writing sample, where I read something and had to then summarize it, I guess giving a writing sample. So I was able to read that because it was in Word, and then they wanted me to succinctly write what it said in a shorter format. So again, I just did that in Word as well. And Zoom Text and or other screen readers were able to help me with that.
Oh, good. So you brought your own tools with you.
Exactly. Yep.
Hey, Andy. This is Jay Scheinberg. I haven't met all of you folks. I'm new to the group, not new to LHON. This summer is 30 years for me. Nice to meet you all.
Nice to meet you too, Jay.
Nice conversation with Wayne Daniels last night, and it was crazy that we actually spoke 30 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Almost to the day. So it's kind of weird. But the issue of disclosing is one that I have played around with for many years. When to disclose before an offer, after an offer. I've seen results many different ways, and I think that unfortunately, sometimes the world is cold, and you can know pretty quickly within the first few seconds of disclosing, you know, how the conversation is going to go and where it leads. And unfortunately, you can never really tell. Ultimately, I just had an experience not too long ago, about a month and a half ago, where I flew out to Pittsburgh, had this long 4-hour dinner. The next day was 4-hour meetings, interviews, and right at the end, I disclosed because we were about to move towards an offer, and you get the or many times I've gotten, oh, well, you know, I have breast cancer, and that's cool, or, you know, something that you can kind of tell, you know, that's not cool that they have breast cancer, but obviously that they have, you know, that there's empathy and sympathy.
Yes.
Not that I'm looking for that, but an understanding. But, you know, it's really one of these dances that I don't think that anybody has the right formula for. You know, I'm in software sales, and I actually sell stuff that we're all on Zoom right now. So I sell telehealth services, so the ability to have video visits with your doctor. So there's a compelling argument to be made for disclosing from a disability perspective, but people are people, and the world sometimes is told, and I'm always looking for advice from others who have experienced it, and I'm talking about a 25 year professional career here that I'm still doing the dance.
Yeah, no, I think everything you pointed on there is entirely correct. I mean, a few things I'll kind of echo that you said there as well, that this is, people can be cold, and the fact of the matter is they can be cold if you disclose early on, they can be cold if you disclose like you did in that case right before the offer, and they can be cold if you disclose on your first day on the job. My approach, based on my application with the different companies, has often been I don't want to surprise people on day one as much. And I can't get past day one without probably telling people something. So I try and do it earlier than that. However, I always want to have a first impression with everyone I'm going to have an impression on before they know that, if possible. I try and talk to the hiring manager, talk to HR, talk to other members of the team, all before disclosing, if at all possible. That said, I know I have less control once I'm in person with someone, and because I am asking about some kind of practical exercise, I try and do it then, basically to do it at a time that there's some objective reason for me doing so, because otherwise, like you said, the breast cancer comment you said, sometimes it will be met with something like, I don't know why you're telling me this thing, because here's this other thing about me that I didn't feel the need to tell you about, that's a health concern. And I like to make clear that I'm disclosing this not because I'm oversharing personal information, but I'm sharing this because it affects not only the work later on, but it could affect my in-person aspect of this practical exercise. So I try and do it around, even once I'm in a job and I'm disclosing to colleagues of mine, I try and disclose that aspect of my life in and around me explaining something I would like people to do for me. I try and never leave the conversation out, hey guys, I'm legally blind, so there's that. I always follow it up with, so here are a few things that you should know. One, I'm not being a jerk when I don't say hey to you by the water cooler. And normally a couple other things there that, hey, if we're going to be meeting at some point in time and you're able to send me the presentation beforehand so I can review or make sure I have it up in a way that's accessible to me, that's always a plus for me. So I would appreciate those kinds of things. So anything I can do to kind of explain why I'm sharing that and not just doing so because I feel like it's everyone's information or business, I appreciate that. But you're exactly right. I mean, the right answer for everyone here can be different.
The one thing I would add to that is what I have seen that probably over the last 10 years or so, with the emphasis a little bit more on the sensitivity training and diversity training that goes on in corporate America, that you may have that disclosure conversation and you may, it's met with whatever we're talking about here, you know, whatever the case may be. But what I have noticed recently is that it sort of stops there. And there's an assumption, I guess, on my part, incorrectly, that, you know, manager that I'm going to be working for has told others. And so you find out that hasn't been the case. And then you're sort of like on day one, even though you disclosed, you're on day one, you're going, okay, you know, I can't fill out all this paperwork. How is it that you're the hiring manager and you approved the rec, but you didn't tell all the people that, you know, so it's like you go back to square one. It's an interesting, like I said, an interesting dance.
Yeah, and I hate that we're to continue the dance metaphor, I hate that we're usually just doing this dance ourselves and we have to tell everyone every step they have to take with us instead of them learning the dance moves along the way. Because to your point, I would always prefer if basically the hiring manager took it of their own accord and started at least asking, are there other things I can be doing for you? But more often than not, due to some of this diversity training that you mentioned, they start doing what a lot of those trainings would tell them to do, which is don't ask any question that you're not already being told the answer to. It's not their business to ask you anything. As a result, I've had some companies when I was at Disney, actually at the time, who preferred me not to send a note to the whole team to share my condition with them and what accommodations I'd like from them as a result. I'm going to say I'm having some background noise on someone who may be rubbing a cooking sheet on the floor. I'm just going to guess, but if you could mute that, I would really appreciate it. But the other thing I'd say is a lot of people, due to this diversity training, have learned not to ask questions, which I think is the opposite of what I'd like. I'd like to be encouraged to share my information with people. I'd like others to be encouraged to ask questions if they have them. And I'd like there to be open dialogue around it. But more often than not, because of this training, in an effort to be safe and sanitary, some people take the approach of not asking questions. I'm sure we've all had that approach, where if I think other people are asking other people questions, I'd love them to come to me with those same questions. But the trouble is you have to tell people to do that. And I've had some colleagues who do that openly and others who don't.
Andy, it's John. And I think that comes from a litigation.
Exactly.
A fear of litigation or I'm trying to think of the word here, but companies don't want to be perceived as distinguishing you in any way, but
of
I'm
course.
In your camp. I would prefer people to ask questions, and some people do. It's in varying degrees.
Yep.
Andy, hi, this is Howard.
Totally understand. Yeah. I mean, and no, Howard, you're exactly right. I mean, I think I've been told not to disclose before, basically because they told me, if you disclose, some people may think you're disclosing because we asked you to, and we're not allowed to ask you to. So it's easier if you just don't, in which case there needs to be more communication, but that's the answer to most problems we have as people.
Andy, hi, it's Howard. I have a quick question. And I guess it's apropos to disclose and going back where you had the example about a woman who may have had breast cancer, whatnot. Granted, we'll say times have changed, but 30 years ago, I'm an attorney, 30 years ago, I was applying for a position at a law firm, and I'm an Orthodox Jew, so I can't work Friday nights to Saturdays. Lo and behold, they gave me the offer, and they said, is there anything else that we need to know? Because our attorneys have to come in on Saturdays. So I said, well, I'm Orthodox, but I'm willing to come in on Sundays. Oh, I'm sorry. And they revoked the offer. Okay. Granted, nowadays, with the diversity training, I don't know if that would happen, but that's why I hope to go back to the job force in the fall. And
yes.
That's where I walked in a little, I came in a little late onto the conference tonight. But when, if at all, would you disclose anything about the vision, or would you just keep it close to the vest if and when it becomes an issue?
I think lots of people have heard me talk. So if anyone else wants to kind of answer that question, a number of us have touched on it, but I'm happy to hear someone else's opinion here for Howard.
This is Jay. Howard,
I'll
jump back in and just say it's to answer your question, I would say keep it close to the vest, and if it's something you can't do, you know what? I'm speaking out of turn. I shouldn't give it advice like that. Sorry.
This is the other Howard. My advice would be, to the degree that you need accommodations, you need to disclose what kind of accommodations you would need.
How would you phrase it? Let me put it that way. When you would say to them, would you just come right out and say, the one thing I think you should know is that I'm legally blind and I have issues and I'll need some assistance in that respect, and just put it like that?
Well, one thing, go ahead, Howard, I'm sorry.
I would say that the most important thing for you to do is, as you say that you are legally blind, you need to make it really clear immediately, without taking another breath, that you're completely capable of doing all the things that are required to do the job. And then you say, here's the kinds of things I use to allow me to do the job. So I will, you know, I'll need a computer with JAWS on it, and I'll need, or I'll need Zoom text, or I'll need a magnifier, I'll need anything that's sent around to people by paper and send it to me electronically. But all of what you need is in the context of how you're 120% able and ready to do the job. So if you put it in the context of I can do the job as well as anyone else or better, but I do it a little differently, that's how you do it.
Yeah, okay. I think the three things you said there are really important. One, I'm legally blind. You may prefer a different term. You may say blind. You may say visually impaired, whatever you want to say. But immediately, like Howard said, I can do this job as well as any other candidate you're speaking to. And then third, frame it around why you're telling them, which is because you may need some amount of accommodations and or something for, I mean, you may have missed me saying it earlier on the call, but my approach is always before an in-person interview, and I frame it around the fact that, hey, I'm not sure if there's going to be any practical exercise around this in-person interview, but in case there is, I want to tell you that I'm legally blind. And if there is, I'd like to understand what that's going to be so I can tell you the types of accommodations I'll need to perform the task.
Okay, thank you.
And Jay, I don't want you to feel like you're not able to say anything you want. The, you may know this call is being recorded. I know you work in telecom as well, but we're happy to hear any and all opinions. And I think advice to keep things close to the chest as long as you can is good and should be heard advice from everyone here, because as the world has shown many of us, and it's sad that it continues to do so, is that more often than not, it will be met with some amount of confusion, concern, or even caution when you share that information. So if you're going to share, be certain that you are okay doing so at that point in time and that you wouldn't be better off telling it at a different point in time. And again, that's all very contingent on the amount of vision that different people have here and the amount of accommodations. If you require greater accommodations or it is a more visible disability for you, it is for a lot of people here, you may have to disclose even earlier.
Thank you.
You might need to explain why you're wearing sunglasses inside.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there are people here who would have to explain why they're going to walk in with a cane or not. If you don't want to surprise people with a cane or a service dog, that's an approach to take. I mean, I think part of interviewing is very subjective in general, and the interview starts the minute you start the conversation about coming in. So it's being able to spin any and all of that as part of what makes you who you are, but nothing that takes you away from being the perfect candidate for the job.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. The reason I paused is because you're talking about completely different professions. So, I'm in sales, and so ultimately it's, you know, if my interview is at baggage claim number 42 at O'Hare, and I've gotten to O'Hare and baggage claim 42, then I should be able to have proven that I can, you know, I can travel and I can do what I got to do to close you versus, you know, being an attorney that it requires more, you know, written and type of material.
Yeah.
Other questions? I know there's several other people on the call. Questions around any part of the job process?
This is Blake Steineke from San Diego, and coming from someone who is currently a marketing student looking for internships and stuff. I guess what technology do you use for your job, and just like how do you navigate doing certain tasks practically, like with your technology? Like you said, Zoom text, but like what tasks are you getting, and how are you like making it accessible?
I'll see if anyone else on the call would like to answer that question, but I'll chime in as well. All right.
Yeah, I'll jump in. This is.
Yeah, please, oh, sorry, Jessica, go ahead.
No, I was just going to jump in. My name is Jessica. I would say, especially for technology and what you use, I would say whatever you're using in school right now that makes you successful at school whether you're reading textbooks or you're looking at pictures and blowing them up, and all of those tools are exactly what you want to be using when you're in the workplace. You're comfortable with those tools. You know how to use them. You probably know them like the back of your hand. And that way that tool is just like another asset of yours, and you're not having to overcome any other tools or barriers or to learn new technology as you go into the workplace. So master that while you're in school and you are golden.
Yeah, Blake, first and foremost, thanks so much for your question. You are an awesome person. And I won't elaborate on that, but you're really cool. And I think for a marketing student specifically, I work adjacent to marketing. And so I have some experience with some of that. I review assets and things of that nature. And like Jessica said, I rely a lot on Zoom Text, but just to cover the types of equipment I asked for when I went to Amazon, I asked for Zoom Text on my system. I asked for a CCTV at my desk, and I asked for an iPad. I asked for an iPad Pro, actually, the larger one. And I rely on Zoom Text of the three of those the most. My CCTV, I rarely rely on, but I would if someone had some kind of printout that needed me to look at. Someone's drinking a Capri Sun. I can hear that. What else did I say? Oh, the iPad I use when I'm going to meetings. And if I don't want to carry a laptop, I will take notes from my iPad since I no longer write notes with a pen. I also rely on the iPad if I'm doing presentations where I'm standing up. I typically make two versions of any presentation that I'm going to present. One that's going to be behind me for the audience, and a second version, which is the exact same as that one, but has a huge single word displayed across the entire slide to kind of jog my memory on what this slide's about for each one. I can normally tell that, hey, I'm on the same slide as the one behind me, but I certainly can't read any writing on it. So I will have single words kind of on top to show me where I am and remind me what I need to kind of get across to the audience on that slide. So I use all three of those, and I know others use different types of things as well.
I'll
piggyback up on that. I was just going to piggyback up on that. I use the same, very similar. I have Zoom Text that I use often. I have been using JAWS with my Zoom Text because I like the verbosity and I like that it talks to me a little bit more so I can not have to look as much. I deal a lot with spreadsheets and things like that, a lot of email correspondence, so a lot of reading. And I actually have an iPad Pro as well. I got my iPad way back in the day when I had first lost vision, and I literally carry that thing with me like as if it's my phone. So I can always text message when I need to, or send emails, or take notes. Even if I'm sitting in front of my computer at my desk, I'll be taking notes with my iPad. So I definitely agree with all those. I also have a CCTV next to me, and it probably collects my mail at this point because I don't really use it.
And then how did Amazon respond when you were like, when you got the job offer and then you're like, hey, could you get me all this expensive equipment? Like, how did they receive that?
Honestly, very, very, very well. So my experience with Amazon, I don't know whether to call it unique or what, it was a little different than Disney. Disney responded a little more skeptically. I had been working there at the time. Amazon, I went there. I disclosed to the HR person and asked them to kind of share the information with all of the people I would be having my in-person interview with. And at that point in time, I said, hey, just in case I needed to get special equipment for the interview, they told me there's no practical exercise, so I wouldn't need it. But that was my first time kind of sharing that I use special software, and they should know that they'd be getting that for me. And then once I was given the offer and we had negotiation and then I accepted the offer, I started working directly with my hiring manager, the person who would eventually become my boss, disclosing what I would need. And a lot of it's just being very specific at that point in time. And so I sent details and SKUs and all those types of things of exactly the kind of software I'd need, and worked both with them and with the IT department. they had never, believe it, I mean, Audible, I mean, it was shocking to me, but Audible had never had a blind person work for them before me. So I was the first person who ever had a Zoom Text license. I was the first person who had Zoom Text working with SPSS, and first one who had asked for an iPad or a CCTV. But all of the things I asked for were met with willingness to purchase those things for me. Now, obviously, the ones that Amazon purchased for me belong to Amazon. If you are able to get things from your state or your city, quite often those will eventually become your property. So I still own some pieces of equipment that I was given through the state of Florida when I first lost my vision. And those I was able to take up here because they belong to me. But all of the things I got through Amazon belong to Amazon.
Andy, did you just go straight to asking Amazon for that equipment, or did you consider opening up a case with DOR or whatever it's called in Jersey to get them to provide it?
I considered it, but also knew that I didn't necessarily need duplicates of a lot of the things I had at this point in time, and thought that Amazon would work faster. I also knew that when it came to programs and software, I'd need to get either willingness from Amazon to put it on their system or just get it from them. So when it came to the software, it was a quick decision to get it from them. When it came to the other things, I debated it more, but thought that getting it expedited by doing it through Amazon, unless I met resistance, was going to be the approach I wanted to go with.
And did they have to do any special scripting for stuff to communicate for you, or were they able to just you plug and play and off you go?
For the most part, plug and play. I mean, so there are some things that do not work as smoothly with Zoom Text from a screen reader perspective, at least. There are some things that I still rely more on the Zoom features than I do with the screen reader aspects of Zoom Text. I have Zoom Text Magnifier Plus Reader. There are some aspects because they aren't read especially well. I mean, for instance, when PDFs are sent to me that aren't quote-unquote smart PDFs, quite often I still have to read those with vision, and it's much slower, those types of things. However, when I actually have an upgraded version of Adobe that allows me to edit PDFs, which Amazon was able to provide as well, which means that if there's any type of PDF that can be read, I will have the ability to have it be read through a screen reader, but that's not always the case. Sometimes there are images that just would never be read through OCR technology. So, and I don't think, maybe scripting is an option there, but I haven't gone that route. And to ground everyone, scripting, if you go basically to the developer for any amount of software, you can have them actually rebuild or upgrade their apps or their websites for the accessibility aspects and add what's called alt text, which is like text that lives behind images to read and describe things to you. This is very commonplace for a lot of websites, but when it comes to proprietary applications and or software that lots of companies rely on, they haven't done their due diligence to make those things as accessible. So if you go straight to the developer, sometimes they can add that feature for you, and oftentimes it may be worth that if you're relying on that kind of software on a daily basis. Any other questions from anyone on jobs in general? I'm checking the time while I say that. We've got 48 here. Go ahead, Lissa.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to mention and sort of remind people about a service that that's available when people are in job mode. There's the group called Job Accommodation Network, askjan.org, and we had a representative from that organization come to a conference a couple of years ago, and they presented their services, and they're just a really interesting group of people. They don't charge. That's kind of the first reason why I like them, you know, and you can call them and you can talk through employment situations, you know, whether it's, you know, if you're currently working and you're trying to figure out what accommodations are reasonable, what's the definition of it, things like that, or, you know, does a job need to be restructured and what's reasonable? They deal with that, those issues. That's what they do. So they're sort of at that fulcrum of they spend half their time talking to employees and they spend their half their time talking to employers, and they educate both sides on what's reasonable and what accommodations are and how to get from where you are to where you need to be in terms of meeting the needs of the employee in the workplace. And they've got lots of resources on their website at askjan.org, and they're more than happy to have, you know, a conversation so that you can discuss your own personal situation. And I just want to make sure people are aware of it. There's a video Andy mentioned really early on, that there's a lot of the videos from past conferences, and a presentation by that person is up there. And, you know, if you watch it, it's interesting. Or if you just go to askjan.org and call them and just ask for help, they can guide you. But I just want to make sure the group is aware that that's a resource that's, like I said, it's free, and they know about our community because Maria and I spent a lot of time getting to know them before they came and spoke at the conference. And they, you know, worked with a few folks in our group, and they came to our conference. So they help any disability, anything, but they have a specific knowledge and understanding of LHON, which I think can be helpful, and they can just help people brainstorm issues. So just want to make sure people are aware.
Can you spell that for us one more time, Lissa? Is that askjan.org?
Yeah, askjan.org. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to remember because it's the Job Accommodation Network, Jan, askjan.org.
Thank
now,
you.
Is that only applicable to U.S. citizens?
Like, I think we got asked that question. You know, I get the impression that, you know, based on their funding, it's one of those things where there might be one answer based on funding and another based on these people are in the helping profession. And
right.
So, you know, what, you know, they know ADA law, right? That's what they're trying to help you is in the U.S., you know, they're trying to help people on both sides of the work situation understand what the ADA requires, and, you know, what, how do you disclose when you do have a disability? Who do you inform? What does a letter look like when you're explaining? And again, they're operating under a U.S. framework. On the other hand, if you were to call and say, hey, I'm in Canada and I heard you talk, you know, can you just help me think this through from a logical point of view? I don't think they'd hang up on you. You know, somebody asked at the time, do they help college students? And they were like, well, you know, our role is defined as workplace, not college. But if you happen to call and ask us questions, we would do our best to help you. So that's how, you know, that's how I think it would go.
Thanks for adding that, Lisa.
This is Cindy. I wanted to add a slightly different perspective on things, you know, from whatever everybody else has been talking about. I am self-employed, and so I haven't had some of the same types of things that have been discussed, but I did want to throw out my perspective. So no job interviewing and no big company providing the equipment. I got all that through the state, but something really cool that I figured out recently is the thing called IRA. They have free minutes available for people who are visually impaired and they're self-employed. And if you have a work situation come up and you need help from an IRA agent, then I've used it a couple of times and it works great. I was the only one at work and we were closing down for the weekend and I wanted to change my answering machine message and there was no way to figure it out without eyes on the little screen on the answering machine. So I called an IRA agent. They helped me sorted out. She had no idea how to do it, but she took a picture of it, looked up instruction manual online, and talked me through how to record my new outgoing message on our answering machine. You know, things like that that come up that are just, it's wonderful to have that kind of help available, and I wanted to share that.
That's awesome, Cindy. Thank you so much.
You know, and building on what Cindy's saying, I'm trying to find it online, but I'm pretty sure, Maria, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that if you're doing a job hunt,
yes,
and if you,
that's right,
if you have,
yep,
the, okay, so if you have the IRA product and you call in and say, you know, I'm working on my job hunt now, they will the agents won't count those minutes. Those get charged to somebody who's offered a grant to help people with vision loss become employed, so you can get access to an IRA agent during doing that work.
That's for things
you can
like
open up the app,
resume or building a cover letter, anything like that, they were willing to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think they also work with companies so that if you work with an employer and, you know, the employer wants to make your location a bundled minute situation, they do things in a way that make it as affordable as possible so the employee's not dinged. So that's another thing to explore.
That's exactly right. So I know if you work for an employer, they can turn your office into what they call an IRA access point, I believe. And in that case, your employer is the one who is billed for your minutes instead of yourself. I know we're getting close to the top of the hour, but any other questions from the group?
Sorry, one more IRA. For IRA, one quick thing. I know some states have approved IRA on their voc rehab list. It's new, and so they're hesitant to do it, but I've seen it on certain states. The IWARE can be like on their hardware side, and the minutes bundled can be there. So voc rehab, if you have a case open, you can at least ask if it's in your state. Sorry, on to the next person.
Now, my question was something else, not job-related, but with respect to JAWS. So I don't know if you want me to hold off later for that.
No, we're happy to take that question now. I mean, later on after the recording, I'll turn off the recording and others can introduce themselves, but I think that's good to ask now.
Okay. I was given JAWS, a laptop, and all the equipment by New York State because they have me down as being self-employed. However, when I go back into the job force in the fall, I'm going to be looking to see if I could go into a larger office. Question I have is, they loaded JAWS onto my laptop. Do you know if there's any way that if I do get hired and to put JAWS or to transfer JAWS from my laptop to their computer?
I mean, without knowing the specifics of the company you'd be going to and their software system, my short answer would be probably yes. All you'd have to do is take your license and basically unauthorize it to your laptop and reauthorize it through some kind of authorization key or something to your new laptop from work. And that's assuming you only have one license. If there's multiple licenses issued to that, to your basically usership, then you can probably load it on both. But if there's a single license, I would assume you could remove it from your system and add it to your workplace's system. And I'm sure someone at the IT department of your new company would be the one to help you do that.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm gonna give others a chance, one more minute, and then I know there are several who have been muted a long time here, so I may unmute everyone just in the off chance that someone's had trouble unmuting and they have a question that should be recorded. All right, I will go ahead and unmute that then, see if there are others who have questions here. And then if anyone's here and they would have other questions that they didn't want to be recorded, I will turn the recording off in the next 5 minutes or so.
Here that if you have to jump because it's the end of the hour, really do appreciate you being here. Our next call, as always, will be the first Wednesday of September, same time, same phone number. But we'll have more specifics on that later on. Now I will unmute everyone in case they have questions. All right, I know we just had some feedback here, but I will mute individuals again shortly. But if you know you don't have a question and would like to mute yourself again, you can do that by pressing *6 or by muting from your phone. I know a few have already muted again already, but I just want, I know occasionally have people who had trouble muting, so I, or unmuting, so I wanted to give everyone a chance here. Apologies for any background noise.
So how do you get the thing called, that she told me about on here called Aerie?
It's an app.
Mhm.
And it's A I R A. It's an app called Aira. And so if you load that in, then the free offers that we're talking about are listed inside the app.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure Lissa posted a link to it under in the group.
Yes, she has.
Aira Employment, Eric, link is up. Yep.
I think that's Steve who asked that question. Is that right?
Yes.
But yes, it's Cindy who mentioned the Aira. She is self-employed, yes.
Okay.
And she mentioned that special... Go ahead, Cindy.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
She asked what you did since you were self-employed.
Oh, I own an art gallery and we do custom picture framing. And so at this point, I am promoting and marketing and that type of thing. And the day-to-day, you know, the business aspect of running the business, I'm still able to do. And so that's my job at this point.
Oh, okay. Thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Apologies for background noise. I want to say the background noise may be coming from people who are asking questions, so we may keep those lines open for now. But Jessica, did you say you had a question?
This is Kim. I have a question. Do you know if there's a certain amount of time that a company has to provide accessibility to their or extends once they've been told there's a vision problem?
If I understand the question correctly, let me know if I'm wrong, but you're asking if there's a specific amount of time that companies, and I'm sorry, I'm going to have to start meeting some of these. You're asking if there's a specific amount of time. All right, I muted one. You asked if there's a specific amount of time that a company has before they are required to provide accommodations to an employee. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. I think that's probably a certain amount of legalese. And is there a precedent that's been set by companies? Potentially. I know there are constantly those kinds of cases going to the courts. There's actually a really big case going to Supreme Court with Domino's right now that's not for accommodations with employees, but it's due to web accessibility. So I don't know if anyone here is following that, but I don't know that there's a specific deadline. I think it's probably more that they need to work with the employee and be working towards that and working towards providing those correct accommodations. But in short, I don't know.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you, though.
And I think this is Lisa. I think the answer is in that word reasonable. Because in the conversations that I've had with Job Accommodation Network, they've sort of laughed and said, yeah, people want us to explain what's reasonable. And all we can say is the law says reasonable. And
right.
So the definition of reasonable is what a reasonable individual would, you know, think is reasonable. So, you know, you have to listen to it and go, well, would it be reasonable that it would take a week or it would take a month? Well, if that's reasonable to people hearing it for the first time, yeah, then it is. So I think that's kind of how they answer it. But if you call Job Accommodation Network and ask them, you know,
yeah,
that would be it. And then the other thing is, so even the way you asked the question was a built-in assumption that the employer is providing it, but is it the employer that's going to provide it, or is it the state that's going to provide it? And it seems the state often takes a very long time. And the, you know, and one thing I've heard Job Accommodation Network say is when a company is, when they're assessing whether it's reasonable for the company to provide an accommodation, they have to look at the company's total resources. So if it's a really small company, it, you know, a certain amount of money may be a hardship for a smaller company, but a large, you have to look at the larger company's resources and their ability to provide the accommodation. So that's the kind of stuff they can help guide you to the answers.
Okay. I'm going to give them a call tomorrow.
Thanks for your question, Kim.
And just to expand on your question, Kim, I worked for a smaller company and got it within days. And I worked for a very large company in 3 weeks. So it's always like a toss-up, and you just kind of have to – I probably called every – maybe twice a week to advocate, hey, where's this at? What's going on? What's progress? And I did that often. It's just such a process, especially maybe we were like the first line people they've ever heard of. So they're like, you want what? You want JAWS and this? You want $1,700 worth of equipment? And I'm like, yes, I know. So keep going.
Yeah. Jessica, did you do that through the state or through the employer?
Employer for both situations.
Both of them? Okay. All right. Well, I have been calling both of them and I will continue. So thank you guys.
You're very welcome. And I think Jessica must be running a marathon while she does the call. So congratulations, Jessica.
Really sorry. It's so nice outside. I couldn't stand. Oh. So it's like super windy, and I think you're going to get a storm. I'm running back home.
That's okay. I think it's awesome. Any other questions from the group? I'm going to give a minute or two, and then I want to go ahead and stop the recording. But want to make sure we get it. First and foremost, thank you all for your great questions tonight. This has been awesome.
Quick question. I forgot what it was called, but it was about when, like, you run into an application or website or app, whatever it is, and it's not accessible. What is that process called again? Like, you talk to the developer?
We refer to it as scripting. They may understand what that means, but I think that regardless, they will probably need an explanation of what you mean.
Okay, and so have you ever ran into that and like talk to a software developer or some company to like fix some app or something?
I actually have. Well, I've worked for companies who have done that. Unfortunately, often from a company perspective, they just want to make sure that blind people can make purchases. But I say that more about my former employer than my current one, to be honest. But I have never done it when it comes to like software I've used for my job. However, I know Jessica has, I know she's in a windy place, but I will tell you that she's, I want to say, gone through that process to have some kind of first party internal software add some scripting to it. But like I said, she's at least started the process of doing that. I don't know that she went all the way down, but it can be a more expensive process as well.
Okay.
So not necessarily not like, for you, but for the company.
So it's not just saying like, hey, developer of this app, like, could you label these extra buttons too? Because you just did some of them, or is it a lot more than that?
I would always encourage you to reach out to those kinds of people. I mean, I use an app every day to purchase a train ticket for my commute. And I actually once reached out to them because there was something that wasn't accessible for me. And I told them about it, and they actually made that change. I mean, this is a government-funded transportation agency who is not typically known to be really great at stuff like that, and they were able to make that change. So I would never discourage anyone from raising a red flag and doing those types of things, but that doesn't mean that it's always going to happen either.
Cool. Thank you.
Not a problem.
I'd like to point out to everybody that there's a Facebook group that's for navigating in the workplace. And so if you didn't already know about it, it might be a good resource.
Yes, I think we can probably post a link to that group on this call's post from the normal LHON page. But like Cindy said, that page is full of stories of people's experiences in the working world after losing vision to the LHON. And lots of great experiences there, from the legal world to people in the medical profession to people working in the business world to self-employed individuals.
What was that?
And I'm glad, Cindy, it's called Navigating Employment/Careers with LHON. And I'm putting the link up to the call running total now. But what makes that group helpful is people telling their stories. So please join the group and please introduce yourself and just give a thumbnail of your own experiences, so that if somebody, you know, realizes that your experience is market research, then they can, you know, tag you, ping you, ask you questions. So please join it, and the Navigating Employment/Careers with LHON, and please just introduce yourself briefly over there from a career perspective so people know who you are.
Yeah, and I'll be the first to echo what Lissa said, which is, if you've read a story from someone there and it resonated with you and you have questions for that individual, don't hesitate to reach out, you know, regardless of who it is. The people who have posted there are people who would like to tell other people more about that. So feel free, that's an easy way to communicate with anyone.
Thank you.
Before I stop the recording, I want to add details about next month's call. Today is the 7th. Next month's call is September 4th. That's the first Wednesday of September. Again, at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. We welcome everyone from every country across the globe. You can call using the link in the invite, or also the phone numbers. But again, that is September 4th, the first Wednesday of September, and you will have a different host, and we will have a different topic to talk about. So if you have any recommendations for topics, you can post in the group, you can reach out to any of the three of us, or you can email us always at lhonlive@gmail.com. With that, I may go ahead and take us off the recording, but I want to give people an opportunity to introduce themselves or ask any other questions then as well.